Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Chai with Jams podcast, season two. I'm Ritika Agrawal, your host, where I sit down and have a virtual cup of tea with some of the most inspiring and successful individuals from around the world. Join me as I delve into their stories, explore their triumphs and challenges, and discover the ingredients that help brew them success. This season, we're focusing on individuals that are on the rise, that wear multiple hats, and have insights that can help transform your everyday life. Please join me in welcoming our second guest, Vijay the Music Man, a 25-year-old Indian-American pop star and rapper born and raised in Durham, North Carolina.
Hello, Vaibhav. Welcome to the Chai with Jams podcast. I am so thrilled to host you because I am a fan of your music. So it is just so exciting to learn more about you and your journey as an artist and your music today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Ritika. I really appreciate it.
How have you been today?
Good. Today's been pretty good, relaxed. It's a Friday, which I'm really grateful for. The week has been pretty busy, but things are going well. How about you?
That's awesome. It's been busy, but busy is always good. I'm excited to get launching season two for Chai with Jams. So I'm super excited to be bringing you on now.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me and congratulations on your second season.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Before we get started, can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Vaibhav, but my artist name is Vijay the Music Man. I've been making music for the past 8-ish years now. And I'm 25 years old, Indian American, queer singer-songwriter based currently out of Cary, North Carolina. I make pop, R&B, and hip hop music with kind of Indian fusion elements. And I'm really excited to be here to talk about my upcoming fourth album.
That is incredible. Congratulations. That is so exciting. And you know what the beauty of it is? I think it was exactly a year ago where we met in New York and you were kind of upcoming. You had just launched Chaos on a Canvas and you were promoting it. You were on Slashy and now it's your fourth album. So way to go. And you just got matched. So you're wearing multiple hats. It's amazing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I'm really grateful for both Brown Girl Magazine and Slashy Summit for connecting me with fellow creators like you. It's been so fruitful to get to communicate, and it just shows us how helpful social media can be in terms of the fact that we're at a distance. We've met once in person, and yet we've managed to stay connected and support each other through our creative journeys.
Exactly. That's the beauty of it. I truly agree with you. You mentioned you're in North Carolina. So is that where you grew up?
Yes, I've been born and raised technically in Durham, North Carolina. Me and my family just moved to Cary, which is about 15, 20 minutes away. But Durham, North Carolina has been it for me since birth.
So how did your upbringing in Durham, North Carolina influence your musical journey and like the development of your alias, Vijay the Music Man?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so Durham has always been very integral to my identity because when my parents first moved here as immigrants, they ended up living in Durham, which was a choice amongst the Indian community because the Indian community to this day is still not very present in Durham. In fact, I know growing up in high school, I would always be really excited to tell my friends that I went to school in Durham because I was proud of where I grew up. And all of my friends, Indian friends specifically, in Cary, Morrisville, Raleigh, North Carolina, where there are higher rates of Indian people that live, they would make jokes about the, you know, sort of lower socioeconomic status that Durham was associated with. I never kind of got it, and I'm very happy about that because I think this idea of like materialistic success and materialism altogether was not passed down to me. My parents are not like that, and my upbringing was not like that. And I think that's played a lot into my music. As somebody that fully releases independently, I don't have a record label or a team. All of the albums that I've come up with have been made in-house, literally. I think that growing in Durham and realizing how powerful things can be, just pulling stuff from the roots and keeping it simple, has been super helpful in my identity, both as Vaibhav and as Vijay the Music Man.
That is so beautiful. And I think so many beautiful things start at home, right? I think the notion of you need to have a studio or you need to have somebody backing you up, of course, it's helpful and it gives you kind of that stepping stone. But I don't think that it is something that is your pivotal starting move. I think you can do it. You can always DIY. You can always do it yourself. And I think you are a prime example of that. So thank you for sharing it.
Yes, thank you.
So how did, you know, you mentioned that you're Indian American, your parents were immigrants and you're queer. How did music kind of impact these intersectionalities?
Music was always the link for them. I think that was the only way that I was able to process all of the trauma that came with accepting that kind of intersectionality, as you mentioned. I know that even before I started making music myself, it was always such a whiplash moment to come home from school and be surrounded by the sounds of Indian classical music, because I come from a family of artists. My mom is a classical dance teacher and she grew up teaching dance at home. And so my brother and I would always come home to sounds of like Bharatanatyam dance happening downstairs and upstairs. And my grandmother, who's no longer with us, but at the time, used to teach classical music. So the house was always just filled with beautiful sounds. So I think that music has always been a process of coping amidst the chaos for me. And I think tackling on that acceptance of my queer identity, which didn't happen until I was 22 or 23 years old, that happened more when I shifted my relationship with music to kind of use it more as a journal and to be introspective. And so I started making this music based off of lyrics that I'd written in the notes app on my iPhone, just based off of how I was feeling every day. And so I would never filter myself. I would always be as honest as I could. And that's what music continues to be for me now. It's almost like a form of therapy and checking in with myself to see how am I balancing all of these different identities while also making time to take care of myself.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. Like as you were describing your home setting as you were growing up, I just was in awe. I think that's just such a beautiful scenario. And that also reminded me of your music video, Uglies. Did your mom be like a strong inspiration? Because I've seen classical dance moves in Uglies, but it's also got that chaotic vibe to it, which I think goes so hand in hand with chaos on a canvas. So how did your mom kind of influence that part of your journey?
I think my mom was more of like a subconscious influence there, because so the director of that Uglies video, her name is Shreya Navale, and she was the one that decided to sort of come up with the concept of trying to juxtapose elements of hip hop with Bharatanatyam and taking on queer identities as well. It wasn't until she said this sentence that I thought about this way, and it is the fact that Bharatanatyam is apparently a form of drag, and it can be said for the same thing across classical dance style, because how you're putting the makeup on, the expressions you're using, the hand movements, it's all a way of performing as a different being than what you exist in. And that is exactly what drag is. And so we decided to take, you know, we had the kutu, like hard hitting hip hop sections, but I think the most beautiful, intimate section of that Uglies video is the Bharatanatyam sequence. And the reason why I say my mom was a subconscious influence is because Shreya explaining that to me hit right at home, literally, because I knew my mom has dancers. She works in this school. She runs this school. So getting to rope in everything that was in my upbringing that probably played a huge part into why I'm so comfortable with myself today, it felt like almost paying homage to everything my mom raised me with and the ideals that she raised me with.
That is so beautiful. I'm sure she's so proud of you, right? And then, because going back to you being brought up in North Carolina and then your home being surrounded with classical music and classical dancing, now obviously that was just tied to your home, and then outside of home was different, probably hip-hop music and pop, and I do see that intersectionality in kind of your music now. But how did that play, like when you were coming home you were listening to really Indian instruments, and when you were probably out with your friends it was just a whole different world of music? How did that kind of influence you as you were growing up?
So I know that, I was taught Indian classical music by my grandmother, and I think I brought a lot of the, sort of, we call it in like in that classical realm, the name is Gamakam, but it's essentially just like adding riffs in like English music. And which is why I feel like a lot of people that are classically trained in Indian music are much much more easily able to transition to singing English music. So in middle school and high school, I was in choir and a cappella groups. So I noticed that initially when I started singing English music, because there's a very specific way that you sing the Indian classical songs, I was almost taking the tonality and bringing that to the English music. So I almost had to reverse train myself out of doing that. But then me and my grandmother started experimenting a lot more with fusion sounds. So taking what I would sing in choir and bringing it home and asking my grandmother, hey, what would this be like if we were to add swarams and gamakam to this? And this is around the time that, you know, Pen Masala and these other huge Indian a cappella teams are getting bigger and bigger. So fusion was definitely encouraged. And I think that that plays a huge part in the kind of music I make today. While Uglies is definitely a standout track in my discography because it's not the kind of music I typically make, I love using harmonies and really filling out my songs with lots of vocal moments. And I definitely have to credit my Indian classical music training for that.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And kudos to you for actually merging the two. I've spoken to so many people who have had a hard time, and I'm sure you did too, but just kind of understanding what their identities are, because it's so, so different. It's poles apart. But I think the saying of music is a universal language, I think this is a prime example of that, of how you can merge different melodies and different art forms and bring it together and make it what you've brought to us. So that's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Speaking of your mom and your grandmom, a lot of my prior episodes, we talk about surrounding yourself with cheerleaders and, you know, kind of cutting out the noise. So can you talk to us a little bit more about who your support systems were during this process and how did they kind of help you grow?
Sure. So I think that I have to credit both my mom and my dad and my brother. That's my like immediate nuclear family. I would credit my grandmother as well. She passed away like earlier on during the pandemic, but she definitely played a huge role in kind of my identity while she was here. But to this day, my pillars of strength are absolutely my mom, my dad, my brother, and newly, which I'm sure we'll get into, my boyfriend of the last 8 months. So that's definitely like those are my people right there. And I think, so my parents did a lot of unlearning, which is so important because I feel like as Indian people and as immigrants, especially, it can be so easy to blame our upbringing on why our mindset is the way it is. But my parents have taught me that, you know, no matter how old you are not beyond change. Like you can definitely change your mindset and be open to communication. And in that, having conversation, you can kind of heal that intergenerational trauma that a lot of Asian immigrants and immigrant period end up facing. Mm-hmm. So they have been great examples of that. My brother, as somebody who's grown up here and is younger than me, was kind of instantly off the bat accepting when it came to my queerness. And that was kind of a great, like I said, juxtaposition to the process that my parents had to go through. My boyfriend plays a really big role to this day in terms of realizing there's so many ups and downs after coming out of the closet, because you have to, again, for me, do a lot of unlearning about how much we are internally taught to sort of limit the space that we're taking up out of fear of violence, frankly. And he always encourages me to be as loud as I can be and take up as much space, because when you've been confined, you know, with the metaphor of being in the closet, when you've been confined for so long, it can be so freeing to come out. And you have to understand that you have the right to express yourself however you want. And if that's how I'm doing it through music, then being as loud as I want to about it is exactly how I would go about it. And I saw something super important that I want to tack on to this specific point. Yesterday on TikTok, I saw something about how when it comes to femininity within queerness, it's almost weaponized and it's seen as threatening to people that are not part of the queer community, and specifically cis straight men, because it's rooted at this core of not liking women at all, not liking women and how women exist and the freedom that comes with being a woman. And what is one integral part of how some women choose to live their lives? And it's femininity. So as a gay man, when you're experimenting with sort of that spectrum of masculinity and femininity, you will immediately be a cause of hate if you're aligning more with the feminine side because of that societal hatred towards women. And I just thought that was a really important point to bring up right now.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for bringing it up. And speaking about societal, you know, norms and societal pressures and the way society thinks in general, can you talk a little bit more about like the challenges that you faced while growing up? Because I mean, how was it growing up in North Carolina? How was it being an Indian American queer man? And just talk to us about that. And it's amazing that you are surrounded by these cheerleaders that are your pillars of strength for life. I think it's so, so, so important. And just, I think a lot of people want an army. And honestly, even if it's one or four people, that and it's is your army in itself. So I think that's just so, so beautiful that you have that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I feel like it's so important because some days growing up, especially like I said, it was tough because I hadn't accepted my queerness until I was 22. So especially as like a middle schooler or a teenager in high school, it's not really something I even thought about, frankly. I was so much more concerned about, okay, how Indian am I? How much space am I taking up in this way? What can I relate to? And it's just that like typical sort of like NRI struggle where it's like, okay, like I'm too Indian for America to accept me, but I'm too American to fit into the Indian community. So it's kind of that balance. And my parents never forced my brother or I to exist in any sort of identity than who we were. So like anything, the people that I surrounded myself with when it came to my Asian identity and the people that I now surround myself when it comes to my queer identity, this is all self-selected. And as a result of that, there's definitely been ups and downs, but I can confidently say that all the decisions that I've made thus far have been my own. But in terms of like coping, like I said, music has always been there, whether it was my own or others. Finding artists that would speak about the struggles of fitting in and representation and who fought for representation, they've always been my favorites, yeah. Regardless. My goals as a musician have definitely shifted since starting to make music. I think that I used to believe that sort of mainstream success and like awards and recognition is what I would aspire for. But as I've realized just how calculated the music business is, I've kind of restructured those goals. And also kind of just personally, I've changed a lot since I started making music. And I think now my goal is definitely to impact the people that look like me, the kids especially who might be Indian, who may be queer, who may be both. And the number of little like Indian kids, straight, queer, whoever, that have come up to me and been like, thank you, or I love your song. That is what actually matters the most to me, because I think that I'm helping them with having these bigger conversations with themselves. And if I can help like a little Indian kid feel more accepted by themselves in this community and grow up to feel confident in expressing themselves, then my job is done.
It's so beautiful that you kind of answered my next question, which was going to be, what is your message to your listeners? Like when we're at home, it's music is so intimate, right? Because when you're at home, it's like there's just something so nostalgic about songs that you heard when you're growing up or something that you're listening to when you're like working. So like, what is that one message that you want your listeners to have when they're listening to VJ the Music Man?
Yes. So with Chaos on a Canvas, it was to find that little inner voice and like turn it up and make it loud. With this upcoming album, I found my message is definitely going to be take a risk and do it without the fear of failure. I think the most powerful thing that we can learn, especially as like Asian people, is to unlearn our fear of failure. I think it's absolutely holding us back. We might make so many mistakes, but why shouldn't we be allowed to do that? What is the point of always knowing we're going to succeed? Because then you know that there's a specific path set out for you and you have no chance of wavering. And the world is just too big for that. So that's my message with this album. Take your risks. They may pay off, they may not, but at least you will know that you stood 10 toes behind the decision that you made.
I want to clap. I want to know how you came up with it, and I'm going to go straight into that. You have four albums, and you did talk about the difference slightly between Chaos on a Canvas and now Mind Altering Substance, which is your fourth album. I am so excited. Tell us when is the album in its entirety going to drop? And then I would love for you to go more in depth with the story and intersectionality of all four of your albums.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. The album is supposed to come out on May 3rd. That is the date that we're working with right now. And in terms of the story, so I'm really glad you asked, because I feel like my first three albums kind of lived in more of like a trilogy space. And I'd like to think of this one as its own thing, as its own sort of story of its own. But honestly, if you were to listen, you could definitely find roots back to the three albums that I've done thus far. The first album I ever wrote was called Escape the Retrograde, and that was about mental health altogether, because it came out in 2020. I was just writing and journaling. So I think that was my most honest album at its time. It helped me sort of come to terms with my identity as an Indian American. And the first album and first half of the second album, actually, I wrote completely in the closet, which is a very important point because you can see how my music has evolved since coming out. My second album, Kinks and Trauma, was about coming out altogether. So queerness, but in just the process of coming out. Chaos on a Canvas was post the closet, now kind of battling those identities. Like I said, who I was when I was straight, what my mental health was like, who I am now that I'm gay and I've accepted myself, what that's been like. Mind-altering Substance is about what it's been like to fall in love and get into like my first serious relationship, and how I feel like that is an experience that many get to have. And when you have that, you realize that having a partner, it's beautiful, but also it can force you to kind of confront a lot of the flaws that you've been putting away for forever. I think it's very different to feel like when you're single, oh my gosh, my mental health is so great. I've come so far. I've healed. I've really worked on myself. And then when you get a partner, you're like, okay, this person is able to see all of these different insecurities and things that I dislike about myself and somehow love them. Why can't I feel that same way about myself? And so that, in that way, is kind of what this album was about.
That is so beautiful. I love your storytelling. I think it's just so beautiful. And I also want to dive into our conversation that we had before this podcast episode, where you spoke to me about a young boy, Shiv. I want to talk about him and how your music was inspired by Shiv and how it was, how you're kind of giving back. You know, I want to talk more about that.
Yes. I'm happy to speak about Shiv. So Shiv, I will, before I go into it, just issue like a trigger warning for anybody. This is just sort of an element. It does talk about themes of like mental health, turmoil, and suicide in queerness. So Shiv was somebody that I met in 2021, right after coming out. My parents joined this beautiful organization called Desi Rainbow, which to this day helps to advocate for Desi queerness and trans identities in terms of providing parents of queer and trans youth a community where parents can kind of talk to one another and kind of help with processing their children's identities. And I'm so grateful for Desi Rainbow. After coming out, I think my parents had accepted my gay identity and they kind of became spokespeople in the group. And so other moms and dads and parents would come and speak to my parents to sort of ask for advice. And one of the children's moms, her name is Shilpa. She had come to speak to my mom about her son Shiv, who had recently come out and was trying to process his identity. And she felt that he could very much benefit from having sort of like an older brother type figure who was also gay, who was also Indian, and paint the future as a positive thing. Now, mind you, I had only come out 2 months prior, so who I was then is very different than who I am now. So I wasn't ready to process and help somebody so young with coping with their identity when I was still struggling after coming out, figuring out who I wanted to be. But Shiv and I bonded on everything outside of queerness. We had similar music tastes. He was extremely involved at school, such a bright young mind, and very sarcastic. He was the perfect picture of when somebody calls somebody an old soul, which I was called an old soul growing up all the time. And it wasn't until recently that I realized that that's just a way of somebody saying that you're wise beyond your years, and it's probably because of a traumatic experience that you're healing from. So Shiv had struggled with his mental health even before coming out, and coming out unfortunately didn't help, because even after coming out, kids would make fun of not only his queerness, but even in queer spaces, he would find that he was being made fun of for his Indian identity. So I know that he was feeling the struggle, because he was like, okay, where am I supposed to turn to? Where is my safe space? Because I can't, I'm too Indian, I'm too queer. My parents are accepting of me, but I still feel like I don't fit in. And at 13 years old, I can't even imagine, or I guess I can slightly, trying to grapple with that. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that do turn to this. Shiv ultimately did end up taking his life despite our conversations and despite the mental health treatment that he was getting. And I knew from that day on that I was going to live as unapologetically as I could. In terms of this aspect of taking up space, we lost somebody because they felt that they were taking up too much space, when in reality, they had no clue what the world had to offer. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to live for myself. I'm going to live for Shiv. If there's a risk that I need to take out there that makes me feel more confident in my identity, I'm going to do it. I'm not hurting anybody by existing, and I'm not hurting anybody by accepting myself. So I should do it as loud and proud as I can, because who knows who else is going to see this and want to live their lives that way as well. And it is definitely spilled into the music. It's a heavy theme on this album in terms of being loud and ending your fear. And so Shiv has inspired me throughout all of my albums, but he's definitely present on this one.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing it. My heart sinks every time I hear this story. And honestly, just more power to, you know, more power to his family. And we have him in our thoughts. We have him in our music. I think it was just so important to kind of bring this up and talk about it, because we're strong advocates for this. And advocacy doesn't just come from talking. It really comes from action. And how can we be that support system, not only just for our generation or like for our community, but beyond? And I think there's the youth that's watching us. And I think it's important for us to kind of set the right example and not allow bullying to happen. I think that is also such a strong narrative, not only in certain communities, but in overall in general. So thank you again for, you know, focusing on these things, for talking about it so loud and clear, and for making people known about stories like these. I think it's just so, so important. So thank you for doing that.
No worries. Thank you for asking and giving me the platform to share. I really appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. I totally missed what I was going to ask. I kind of got pulled away from the story. But, you know, I wanted to talk more about your journey, because you started, you know, you said 8 years ago. Tell us more about, you know, the ideation, from like ideation, vision, and how did you actually kind of bring that all to life? And when you started 8 years ago, it kind of meant that you were solo, riding solo in this journey, which meant you wore multiple hats. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So in terms of the process of what it's like to create an album for me, I know that I never go in wanting to create an album. I'm always, funnily enough, from the beginning, I've been like, okay, I'm just going to make a few singles. I'm just going to work on a few songs. And then I am such a story-based person. I've loved telling stories since I was a kid. Just writing, creative writing has been my favorite thing to do. And so I will start to see links lyrically between what these songs could mean. And I'm like, okay, I have to finish the story. I want to create what I'm trying to talk about. And so in terms of the process of creating an album, when I was first starting, I would take instrumentals off of YouTube, the things that were free. I would lease them out and I would write to the beat. Either I would do that, or I would already have, like I said, lyrics written out in my notes app that I would try to fit to the instrumentals that I would find on YouTube. After that, and after kind of mapping out the story based off of the concept that I wanted to speak about, that comes to release, which I've definitely gotten a lot better at. I think that before, as an independent musician, so much of the kind of war is fought in, is fought in like trying to make the project, that you forget how important it is that you don't have a team. So you need to convince people to listen to the art you created. It's not, they're not just going to go find it because you're not a mainstream artist. And so talking about it constantly, promoting, speaking about it, connecting it to social causes so the music can live on more than just a superficial level. It can apply in so many ways. That's how I've always created my projects. This album, for My Nod Ring Substance, it's been technically my longest process, because a few of these songs that people will hear began as demos that I wrote back in 2018 or 19. So I went back to go and revisit them, and I was like, wait, this kind of fits the vibe of the songs I want to make right now. So it's been like a 5-year journey without meaning to be.
Wow, that's incredible. And I think it's such a strong point to stress on, because you said you were like making music yourself. I think, did you mention you use GarageBand, or did I just make that up?
Yes, so I work with producers to create the instrumentals, but I songwrite, mixing and mastering happens out of the house. Everything is in-house otherwise, so it's all happening on GarageBand.
That is insane. Okay, for our listeners, if you want to do anything, literally the resources, the tools are on your hand. Like, honestly, just start. I think this is just such a strong example. GarageBand is a free tool, right?
It's free.
And remind me, did Chaos on Canvas like stream 13 million people?
Chaos on Canvas hit over 3 million streams, and it was all in-house team, everything done on the laptop.
Can you believe that? That's amazing. Congratulations. I know we're going to surpass that number for this new album, Mind Altering Substance. Fingers are crossed for you. I know that you've done such a beautiful job in just, first of all, I've always told this to you, you communicate so beautifully and your stories are just so beautiful because you've lived it and experienced it. And I think you don't need to be a part of, you know, I think when you're basically allies of the community, and you've also shared your own experiences, that makes your music so, so relatable, even if, you know, we're different from different walks of life. So I think that's just so beautiful. What is next for you after that?
Great question. So like you mentioned earlier in the conversation, I did match. So I'll be starting residency this summer, which is going to be right maybe a month and a half after the album drops. I don't know what music is going to look like during that process, but honestly, I'm optimistic because I said the same thing before going to medical school, that I was like, oh, my relationship with music is going to have to change. Studying work is going to take over. But like I said, because my relationship with music has always been through journaling and mental health and being honest with myself, I can't imagine that it's going to go anywhere. I don't know if albums will be churned out at the same rate. However, I can always promise that more music will be around the way because I see it now as chronicling life experiences. So I would definitely not want to stop doing it. And so I think that I can see some singles coming out after, maybe some remixes, maybe some fun stuff that I can jump on for other artists. I'm really excited about the future.
That's so exciting. Congratulations again on residency and then also on music. I think based on all of your past experiences, I think this journey is going to bring another layer of intersectionalities for you. And I think that in itself is going to inspire you and put out music again. So I'm really excited for what's next.
Thank you. Thank you.
I asked this question to all my guests. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Well, that's such a great question. It's like a heavy one. I feel like live in the moment. I have been such a timeline-based person, like since I was a kid. I was always down to the simplest things. Like I would focus on wanting to hang out with one group of friends on like a Thursday. And I would have done all the work to like call the parents, be like, can this person sleep over? All the fun stuff. And Thursday I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, okay, this is gonna come to an end. I need to figure out when the next hangout is gonna be. And so it's like learning to live in the moment, and that can be applied to so many bigger experiences too. Even now, because there are, you know, this work, there's music, there's so many different identities happening, I find myself needing to try harder to stay present and not catastrophize as much. As somebody that's fortunately got so many good things happening to them, everyone is healthy, like just like a very like nice, simple level, it can be easy to wonder, okay, things are good. When are things going to drop? When is something going to go wrong? And so kind of that mixed bag of telling my younger self, live in the moment, form a better relationship with time altogether, and know that you don't have to fixate on the past, but you also don't have to harp on the future. Okay. While also try your best not to catastrophize. I think those two go hand in hand. Just be as present as you can.
That's so beautifully said. But what will you tell people that are, you know, in this day and age of social media and this whole notion that everyone's doing so much and I need to do this and I need to do that? And I think because of that, we all struggle with living in the present because we're always focusing on the future. How do you kind of give, what kind of advice would you give to people when it comes to social media?
Great question. You are 100% your own competition. You're in your own lane, and comparing your narrative and what you've got going on is the worst thing you can do. I think that I genuinely feel like comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so important to be grateful to yourself and remind yourself how far you've come in your own journey. Maybe you're not exactly where you hoped you would be when you were a kid, but also when you were a kid, you did not understand the intricacies of whatever came with what it entailed to be in your lane. So be grateful for where you've come, so that way you can appreciate when you do achieve the things that happen at the time that they do and when they're meant to happen. I very strongly believe in divine timing, and I think that they can very easily be applied to even social media too.
Thank you. And my last question is, what are the three ingredients that fill your cup of success?
Three ingredients that fill my cup of success. I think that for me, definitely good communication, whether that's interpersonal or intrapersonal. I always want to be honest with myself in terms of what I set out to do. And I always want to be honest with other people about what I'm able to do. Second, time management. Calendars are our best friends because when it comes to overcommitting, it's real, it happens. And sometimes scheduling conflicts can happen and it can end up preventing you from a great opportunity. So schedule everything out, use a calendar. And I think the third, between communication, time management, I think my third sort of ingredient for a recipe for success, compassion. I am a hard proponent of who you are behind closed doors is so much more important than who you are in public, because your reputation is everything and not just the public persona. It doesn't matter if you're having millions of followers, so many opportunities and stuff, when the first thing people say about you is, oh, he's rude, he's mean, he doesn't care about the people behind the scenes. He doesn't want to actually thank anybody that does all the hard work. He doesn't take any time to honor the village of people that created it. So compassion is so important as well. Compassion, time management, communication.
Before we wrap up, do you have any last things that you want to say, last words do you want to say to our audience?
Honestly, just thank you so much for kind of using your platform and creating the space to allow creatives to kind of come and chat. It is so important. It's so special. And it allows you to shine light on something that you're so good at doing. Like, it is not easy to conversate and to host a podcast and to discuss these topics. And kind of like, the world is so chaotic that having a moment to just sit down with a microphone and get your thoughts out, I can't imagine how healing that must be. So thank you for using that and expanding it to other creatives to help them tell their stories as well.
Oh, thank you so much. That meant a lot. Thank you. And thank you for all the amazing things you're doing. I'm so excited for your next album because I'm a fan. I listen to Chaos on a Canvas on repeat. Singularity, I think, is my favorite song.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. No, but thank you so much. This was such a beautiful conversation. And I know our audience is feeling wholesome and they are taking notes like they always should be taking notes. But thank you. Thank you so much for being on the season 2.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye, everyone.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit the follow button on all your favorite streaming platforms. Go follow us on social media at Chai with Champs and share with your friends and family. We'll be back every other Monday at 6 p.m. CT.